residents in Marathon County are pushing back against a plan to build dozens of wind turbines there. We've made it to Friday, it's June 26th, and this is Wisconsin Today Morning News. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up on the show today, the delivery bots that have cruised UW-Madison's sidewalks for years are rolling out of town. And the story of the influential civil rights figure, Father James Groppi of Milwaukee.
Father James Groppi was an immigrant son, the 11th of 12 children, who grew up behind the family's grocery store in the Italian section of Milwaukee's Bayview neighborhood.
Stay with us.
Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferrat.
We are your hosts of Wisconsin Weekend from WPR News.
Each week, our team works to uncover the stories and events that communities all over the state take pride in.
Our goal is to bring you closer to the unique perspectives and the traditions that make Wisconsin a great place to call home.
Along the way, you'll hear uplifting stories of neighbors in your community making a positive difference.
Saturday afternoon at 3 and Sunday morning at 10.
A proposed wind farm in Marathon County is facing pushback from local residents. Avery Martinez says people showed up to a public meeting yesterday to voice their opposition to the Hub City Wind Farm project.
The project would build up to 38 wind turbines across multiple small communities in Marathon County. At an overflowing public meeting, most comments were against the project. A spokesperson for the developer, Alliant Energy, tried to address resident worries about safety, property values, and the changing landscape. But not many were satisfied.
I can guarantee you we never would have moved here and brought our family and the money that we spend here if there was a wind farm.
I don't think these towers add anything special to our landscape.
Some commenters did not identify themselves, but there were supporters.
Wind turbines are so practical and economically beneficial. At the top four states producing the most wind energy in this country are all conservative Republican states.
The project's future will be decided by the Wisconsin Public Service Commission. Avery Martinez, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin's estimated wolf population has fallen for 2 years in a row. The State Department of Natural Resources released the results of its annual wolf population survey yesterday. It showed the estimated number of wolves currently stands at around 1,160 animals, 1,160. That's down nearly 13% over the last 2 years. Lydia Marganow is a wildlife population research specialist with the DNR. She told the state's Wolf Advisory Committee that while the total population is down, the pack numbers are healthy and the decline is not statistically significant.
But overall, the population has been stable.
Wildlife experts told the committee recent mild winters are likely a factor in the declines. Wolves have a harder time hunting when there is little snow, and that drives down pup survival rates as well. Some Green Bay residents spent yesterday cleaning up after a series of thunderstorms ripped through the city on Wednesday. As Joe Schultz reports, the storms caused flash flooding in some areas and brought golf ball-sized hail as well.
A National Weather Service meteorologist says the first round of thunderstorms hit Wednesday afternoon, followed by another round over the same area that evening. Emergency management officials say Green Bay saw 2 to 4 inches of rain in a short span. Lincoln Anderson lives on the city's northwest side. She saw the flooding firsthand.
Within a half an hour, it was up, almost up to our house, and it was just like a river flowing through here. Our neighbors had their canoes out.
The Green Bay Metro Fire Department responded to 42 calls for service Wednesday night, most of which were weather-related. Brown County officials plan to conduct a damage assessment this week. Joe Schultz, Wisconsin Public Radio.
A recent federal housing bill is among the most sweeping and bipartisan housing legislation put forward in years. It comes as Wisconsin faces a housing shortage of tens of thousands of units. The 21st Century Road to Housing Act would do away with some regulatory steps for building new homes. It would also offer incentives for local governments to change zoning and launch pilot projects for financing. Kurt Paulson is an affordable housing expert at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He said the final package knits together dozens of smaller proposals, and because of that, he cautions that it may not do that much to solve the housing crisis.
In order to get bipartisan consensus, you kind of have to water it down to the lowest common denominator, which is not a bad thing. This is how legislation works.
In the meantime, it's not clear if the bill will become law at all. That's because President Donald Trump canceled a planned signing ceremony this week, and he says he will hold it up to force Congress to vote on his preferred voting restriction bill called the Save America Act. An army of small white food delivery robots at UW-Madison has left campus. Rich Kramer reports they're being repurposed to deliver groceries in the U.S. and Europe.
If you've been on Wisconsin's flagship campus since 2019, you've likely seen the persistent little bots cruising the sidewalks. During the COVID-19 pandemic, they delivered up to 400 orders from university dining services each day. They were owned by San Francisco-based Starship Technologies. UW-Madison Director of Culinary Services Peter Testery says they found out in early June the company was pulling the autonomous drones.
We had a great run, and they were able to offer a unique service to our campus that put us on the national map in a number of ways for having that service, and it was a good partnership and sad to see them go.
Testery says other companies offer similar robots, but they're not rushing into anything. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, the story of Father James Grompy of Milwaukee. Stay with us.
Javier Martinez from NPR's Morning Edition. If you count on Wisconsin Public Radio for insights, inspiration, and connection, you're already part of the WPR community. Now it's time to join WPR as a member. Membership powers everything WPR does, from trusted journalism and lifelong learning to music and live events that bring WPR's content to life across Wisconsin.
Give now any amount at WPR.org.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with the story of a Milwaukee priest who was an influential figure during the civil rights movement of the late 1960s.
Father James Grompy was a prominent activist in Milwaukee during the civil rights movement. One particular summer night in 1966, when Milwaukee writer and historian John Goethe was just 19, he joined a march with Father Grompy and the NAACP Youth Council, and it left a lasting impression.
He was a most unlikely civil rights leader. Father James Grompy was an immigrant son, the 11th of 12 children, who grew up behind the family's grocery store in the Italian section of Milwaukee's Bayview neighborhood. Early in his priesthood, Grompy made a trip to Selma, Alabama, that stirred his conscience. The young cleric came back determined to join the struggle for racial justice in his hometown. I marched with Father Grompy near the start of his eventful career as an activist. As the advisor to the NAACP Youth Council, Grompy condemned the whites-only membership policy of the Eagles Club. The fraternal group's roster included what might have been a quorum of Milwaukee County judges. How, Grompy asked, could a magistrate sit in judgment of black Milwaukeeans when he belonged to an organization that had already judged them inferior? The Youth Council targeted one of the club's most prominent jurists, Robert Cannon. For 11 straight nights in the summer of 1966, they picketed his home in a leafy section of suburban Wauwatosa. The marches were quiet at first, but within a week, fanned by nonstop media attention, the number of spectators grew to 4,000, many of them openly, even rabidly hostile. I had turned 19 earlier that summer. I don't recall what drew me to the scene, budding sympathy or just idle curiosity, but I found myself on the west side near the line of march one warm August evening. As the picketers approached, I thought, well, you can watch or you can march. Seconds later, I was one of the relatively few white people in a group of perhaps 200 headed to Wauwatosa. The mood was light at first, almost festive, but the atmosphere changed radically after we crossed the city line at Holly Road. By the time our group reached Cannon's home, we were in the eye of a storm, separated from a mob of jeering, taunting spectators by a cordon of police officers and National Guard troops. After we had marched back and forth for perhaps an hour, Father Grompy said a few words and we headed back to town. It is at this point that my memories become indelible. One of the organizers, thinking no doubt of the symbolism, put me and a black teenager at the head of the line, carrying an American flag between us. We marched directly behind a wedge of National Guardsmen in full battle dress, with their rifles at the ready and bayonets fixed. The scene was surreal, almost dreamlike, and verging on nightmarish. As we headed east on Wisconsin Avenue, a crowd of young white men shadowed us from the sidewalk like running dogs. Some of their taunts were directed at me personally. N-word lover was the most common, but I also heard, "Do you want your sister to marry one?" Never before had I felt so angry, so scared, and so exhilarated all at the same time. Both the goons and the guardsmen were gone by the time we crossed the Wisconsin Avenue Viaduct. Our ragtag group of demonstrators made it all the way back to the Freedom House on North Fifth Street, where the mood, after the evening's adrenaline had worn off, was decidedly quiet. Father Grappi himself seemed just plain tired, but I recall being impressed by his obvious physical courage as well as his moral stamina. A youth council member gave me a ride to my car, and I was soon back in the suburban safety of Hales Corners, where it seemed, that night at least, as if nothing had happened since the beginning of time.
And when I look back on it, I think that Grapp was the one who kept the lid on it. That's the reason Milwaukee didn't burn. He provided young minority people with an opportunity in a constructive manner to vent those frustrations and to say to the system the kinds of things that they wanted to say in a constructive manner. Had he not been there, Milwaukee would have probably burned. You've got a friend.
John Goerda is a Milwaukee-born writer and historian who's been studying his hometown for over 50 years. The archival audio you heard is of NAACP organizer Prentice McKinney from the 1981 documentary film Decade of Discontent. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And of course, we'll get a quick check of your forecast in here before letting you go for the weekend. Mix of sunshine and clouds today, but no rain expected. Highs in the 70s, but a little cooler near Lake Michigan. Overnight, lows down into the 60s. It's going to be muggy as well. Tomorrow, highs in the 70s and 80s, and warming up by Sunday in the 80s across the state. And that'll do it for this Friday. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today Morning News. I'm your host, Alex Crow. Hey, we really appreciate all the ratings and reviews we've been getting lately. Make sure to leave us yours. I love particularly hearing where you're listening from. We've had more than a few listeners in the UK recently, so if that's you, thanks for listening from across the pond. Have a great rest of your day and a fantastic weekend. We'll talk to you again soon.